Saturdays.
Good evening, Cam Fraser.
Hey, man. Good to be back.
Always perusing through your Instagram at the Cam Fraser on Instagram. And couldn't help but notice that you had a great podcast a couple of days ago with a lady by the name of Beck Antonucci. And in that podcast came up the stigma of STIs and normalizing conversations about sexual health with your partners. And I can only speak personally. I don't do that. Not through a lack of ignorance, but I think I'm pretty sure it's the status quo and the norm to start sleeping with someone, you use condoms, and then at some point, like, yes, well, we've proved our allegiance to each other now. We've had about 7 sessions and nothing was smelly or suspicious, so I guess we can take these condoms off and live happily ever after. At least that's usually how it goes in my books.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're epitomizing how a lot of people go through the process of sexual health with regards to their partners as well. They just kind of go into it without really talking about it. Maybe there's a little bit of shame and stigma around talking about it as well, and you just kind of hope for the best and kind of out of sight, out of mind, I suppose. But you know, there's a couple of levels to this conversation. You know, one is like the condom usage, right? Condoms definitely help protect against STIs and pregnancy, of course. So you know, the first kind of layer to this conversation is who's responsible for bringing out the condom and making sure that it's used. You know, typically, I think that kind of falls on the guy in a heterosexual encounter, but that's a conversation to be had to begin with.
Oh, I was going to say, it's 2021, #both parties. No, of course. Well, I think it is incumbent on both to always have condoms on them. It's definitely, you can't go wrong. But yeah, I'll always make sure that I'll top up when I'm down to 3. That's my top-up cue. Gives me a week or two breathing space. What am I talking about? Gives me a month or two breathing space.
The next layer to that is then, like, are you carrying any STIs? You know, have you had a regular or a recent STI checkup? And if you have, and you're not carrying anything, you don't have an STI, are you comfortable kind of like sharing that? But then also, if you, on the flip side of that, if you do have an STI, do you feel comfortable sharing that? And this is where, like, things, for example, like we talk about herpes, Beck and I, on the podcast, and Beck does have the she's open about this, so she has the HSV-1 virus, I believe, and which is the herpes virus. And it's like, do you feel comfortable disclosing that to your partner before you have sex? And is there, you know, there's another piece of this, which is the ethical piece, the consent piece. You know, do your partner, does your partner fully consent to being sexual with you, knowing that there's a risk of transmission? So there's that part of the equation to take into consideration.
Well, what a tricky conundrum, because yeah, there's some STIs that are around forever, right? And there are some that you can get rid of. So I know I used to do it, and I'm pretty sure it's kind of common practice now that instead of like always having condoms, like dudes bring around like their latest STI, like piece of paper from the doctor. Maybe like hang it on a wall in the study, like it's a PhD or something. But like genuinely, there was a girl a few weeks ago that I was hanging out with, and she genuinely, I'm quoting, she said, I'm not going to have sex with you unless you show me that you're clear of any STDs. Like she wants to see the visual proof, which is kind of interesting and kind of cool. And then, yeah, of course, there is the other end of the spectrum, the herpes. Oh, I know the HSV simplex virus well. And that stays around forever. So it's like, well, I mean, imagine you tell someone and then they just crack the shits and then go and tell everyone else. Well, that's a risk.
And one of the ways that Beck shared with me that she kind of got over that was she uses dating apps. So she just put in her profile, I've got herpes, get over it, let's talk about something else. So that's one way of breaking the ice and power just getting play. It out there.
Power play. Good. We're breaking down the stigma. And shout out to all the 20 to 30-year-old trailblazers destigmatizing chlamydia these days as well. A couple of years ago, me and a lot of people have had chlamydia, and I'm not glamorizing chlamydia, please, but there was a point where 4 out of 5 of us in the group had admitted that we had caught the clap before. And the person that said that they hadn't ever contracted that, we just started poking and prodding them and teasing them in jest, saying that you probably haven't had enough sex then, mate. So it was really powerful for the 4 of us boys.
Yeah, to find some solidarity, right? And the fact that there's this experience that we tend to try and sweep under the rug and pretend that it's either not there or suffer in silence, I suppose, right? And there's a lot of guilt and shame associated with contracting an STI. And so having these conversations, kind of, you know, airing it out, I suppose, can be really helpful for combating that shame, that stigma, and ultimately, hopefully, encouraging people to go and practice safer sex and get STIs and hopefully reduce the rate of transmission.
Truth, transparency, and communication, for sure. You cannot go wrong with that. Now time for something a little more Master Foods saucy. You also have on your Instagram that you think a key to becoming more intimate with your partner and learning what your partner likes is to watch each other self-pleasure themselves.
Totally, totally, man. This is like, I guess you treat it as a learning experience is the way that I frame this whole exercise or practice or activity, whatever you want to call it. But you know, we can learn so much from what gets our partner off by observing the way that they get off. There's a lot of resistance, I suppose, to kind of voicing and talking, communicating about, you know, the type of stimulation that you like, the type of strokes that you like. You know, it can sometimes be a lot easier to just demonstrate it. And so that's where I'm getting at with this this idea of like just watching your partner masturbate, learning from that, and then, you know, I saw the way that they stroked their cock with, you know, this particular type of grip. Maybe I'll try that when I'm giving them a hand job next time.
Yeah, great in theory. Great in theory. Hard when push comes to shove in practice. I'm just thinking from my own personal experience. But yeah, I mean, it is great in theory. Do you think this is something that you could suggest straight off the bat or for well-established couples? I mean, I guess you wouldn't want to be too far established because then it's all these years wasted that you haven't known exactly what they like. And I'm just trying to think if what I do, I would like someone else doing. Yeah, I guess I would actually. Yeah, I guess I'd really like that.
Yeah, I mean, the way that I often share this with guys is like, you know, a lot of guys aren't having very good sex. They don't really know what they're doing when it comes to heterosexual sex, I suppose. Mm. And so something I you know, invite guys to do is like bring up with their partner, their female partner, hey, I'd love to see, you know, what you do to touch yourself, to arouse yourself, what type of stimulation you like, what type of, you know, if she uses a toy when she's masturbating but doesn't use a toy when she's with you having, you know, sex, then there's probably a discrepancy there, because what we do when we're masturbating, we know is going to get us off. But what we do when we're being sexual with another person sometimes is just because that's what we think we're supposed to do with another person. So if you can kind of take the lead and you know, invite your partner, be, you know, that playfulness, that curiousness, like, oh, I think it'd be so hot if you, you know, if I could watch you self-pleasure for a little bit and learn a bit more about how you touch yourself, then that attentiveness and that sensitivity to like their pleasure can be such a turn on, not only for them, but also for you as well. I think, you know, seeing someone in their pleasure, self-pleasuring is it can be a really big turn on. It can be a really big arousing experience.
Yeah. And then come to think of it, actually, I reckon even like post-orgasm, like sometimes I'm puzzled like as to what I should then do. Like I reckon like to add to that should be like, and what's your preferred method of aftercare? Or like straight after, like I don't know if they'd like me to like come up for a cuddle or, you know, like double down or like what to do like post that. Because we talked last week, it can be quite uncomfortable post the actual orgasm. You know, I don't know, like, just back off slowly, stop all of a sudden, go yeah. out of the room. You want me to go to the ensuite, clean myself up? What do you want? Because I'll do it.
That aftercare, man, you're 100% right. Like no one's talking about the aftercare.
Hashtag destigmatize aftercare is what I'm saying. And also be prepared for maybe them doing something that you never even considered. Like, don't be that person that's like, oh, yeah, I noticed that you claim to like that anti-clockwise wisping motion. But what about my way, the hummingbird? Like, no, it's not what that's about. Healthy discussion, as always. Love it. All the curtains are down on these chats with Cam Fraser. You can always check out his work at cam-fraser.com. Sex Saturdays.